The soul evolved, the monad evolved down into the atmic world where ideas are created, and here we shared in the dreams of God. And in this world, the atmic world, we formulated our self-consciousness, our identity, and we began to dream of all the things that were going to be. So we underwent all these dreams, and all the ideas in the universe were available to us to explore and to dream about. Okay, then comes a time that we have to wake up. And wakefulness is compared to being born in physical reality. Being born in physical reality is where we reach the correspondence to waking up in the morning. Wake up in the morning. And first of all, when you first wake up, sometimes you don't even know where you are. You ever do that? Oh, what day is it? Where am I? Oh, who am I married to? what's my name? You know, you're really groggy. You don't know what's going on. And when we're first born, we're that way. We don't know, what am I doing here, we think, when we're first born. How did I get here? Where did I come from? And it doesn't take long. You begin to grasp a little bit of the details as you grow up, but you don't really know what your purpose is. And as we plan our day, when we wake up, we're the same way. Well, what am I going to do today? How am I going to approach this day? How am I going to solve these problems? And so it's interesting, the correspondence. And then the next stage is daydreaming, which he pointed out. So that's the next stage in consciousness, and it's actually a higher consciousness. And daydreaming corresponds to the soul, instead of just living his life and going with the flow, he begins to contemplate and meditate and bring down ideas. And when he does this, then he moves to the point where he can go beyond the human, beyond what the average person is doing, and advance and become a seeker of knowledge and realize that there is more than just this physical world to explore, that there's unseen worlds, worlds and thinking that is not available just to the regular vision, but there's more available than we can see with through our normal physical eyes. When we daydream, you see images before you that don't exist in this world, but images and thoughts that are created in your mind, that things that you really want to happen, perhaps. But when you daydream, you don't really daydream about yourself having bad things happen. You daydream about good things. And this daydreaming pulls us toward the good. And this is what happens. This is where we eventually learn to overcome that which is destructive. Because in this game that we're in, there's so many perils, and Murphy's Law prevails to the extent that it seems like everything is against us. And when we begin to participate in the daydreams of God, we pull down ideals which are good, hold them before the mind, and this pulls us toward what is called the dominating good. Because in this universe, and the reason that God plunges into this game, is he realizes that the basic intelligence that occupies every living thing in the universe eventually discovers the dominating good and wants good to dominate over evil. And I don't mean good and evil in the, you know, religious Bible-thumping sense, but more accurately it would be the correct path or the path of error. If we have to choose between error or something that works efficiently, what are we going to choose? We're going to choose the thing that works. In other words, if you have version 3 of a program and version 4 to choose from, and version 4 works better, which one are you going to choose to work with? You're going to choose version 4. You're going to choose the one that works better. And because intelligence always makes the choice of what appears to work better, This produces in the universe a dominating good. Now, sometimes we make a mistake. We'll choose something that appears to be better, but is not better at all. But then eventually we learn it's not better. We learn it's a mistake, so eventually we correct. And one of my favorite quotes is this. Unlearning is learning. It's interesting to contemplate. Just three words. Unlearning is learning. Or five words. To unlearn is to learn. However you want to say it. So that's what we do. We eventually think we're learning and then discover we learn incorrectly. So then we unlearn. And that unlearning process in some ways is more important than the learning process, because you have to most people have to undergo a lot of pain before they will backtrack. Because oftentimes when we do something wrong, we have a tremendous investment in it. Maybe we've invested years of learning. Maybe we've gone to school for 6 years and majored in something that we discovered we didn't like, and we want to do something else instead. So we have to backtrack, but you think, well, you know, I got 6 years and many thousands of dollars invested in this education. I should do something with it. Well, wrong. If it doesn't work for you, it doesn't matter how much you have invested in it, backtrack. To unlearn is to learn. To go backwards from a wrong direction is to go the right direction. So it's a really important principle. And there's also a lot of pride involved oftentimes, because we to go backwards, we have to admit that we made a wrong turn. And for a lot of us, about 99.9% of us, this is very difficult to admit. You know, I was just totally wrong in this direction. Very hard to admit. A lot of pride involved. So what happens, we keep going the wrong direction until the pain becomes so bad that it overrules the pride. And the pain becomes so bad, we think, I have to turn around. And so when the turnaround comes, there's a great relief and pressure taken off the person. And then he'll think, why didn't I do this earlier? It's like a bad marriage. Why didn't I get out of this marriage earlier? I could have got out 5 years ago. I could have avoided getting the devil beat out of me by my monster husband or whatever. You know, and if I'd have just backed out earlier, but I learned my lesson now. And then they go back to somebody else just the same. But eventually, even if we keep repeating our mistakes, we do learn our lesson. Reminds me of my friend Wayne. He had this ideal way of looking at people, that he should be able to trust people. He really wanted to trust people. And I says, Wayne, you can't trust everybody. He says, that's the way the world should be. I said, well, it is the way it should be, but it isn't that way. And so Wayne never locked any of his doors. He left his key and all his vehicles. And he left cash laying around. And people stole from him all the time. He was robbed regularly. And I kept saying, Wayne, you just can't trust people. But he was adamant about this. He says, it's what I believe. I believe I should live in a world where I can trust people. Well, one time, Curtis's brother needed to borrow Wayne's dump truck. And he goes over there and to borrow it, and Wayne wasn't home. And so he looks in the rig there, and he sees a key in there. So he thinks, well, Wayne's a good friend. He won't mind if I borrow his truck for a few minutes. And unknown to Curtis's brother Bill, Wayne was just changing the oil, and all the oil was drained out of the motor. So he gets in, starts it, goes a few blocks, the engine blows up. And to his credit, Bill was about the only guy that really destroyed something of Wayne's that paid for it. So Bill took out a loan, and he bought Wayne a new engine, to Bill's credit. You know, I always admired Bill for doing that one thing, because all the guys that work for Wayne, they take advantage of him. They borrow money, never pay it back, or destroys equipment and not replace it, you know. But Bill, destroyed that expensive engine and took out a loan and replaced it. And then I went to see Wayne again, and after, and I saw his dump truck there, and I thought, well, surely he's learned his lesson. You know, he got the new engine in, surely the key won't be in there now. And I'll open the door, look in there, and what did I see? There's that key. Anybody can pick it up and run off with it still. To his dying breath, he believed that he should be able to trust people. And he lived his life that way, and he suffered a lot by it. He never did learn that lesson. Now, probably in his next life, he's still going to come really wanting to trust people, and he's probably going to reach a point where he'll switch the other way and not trust anybody for a while. You know, this would be my guess, because that often happens. You go from one extreme to the other. So in the next life we're together, I'll probably say, Wayne, you need to learn to trust people a little bit more. You just can't say no to everybody. Yeah, I never met anybody so trusting as Wayne. He was funny guy that way. Lovable, made him kind of lovable, but I was frustrated with him as all of us, Curtis and everybody, was frustrated with him as a friend, because we say, Wayne, you got to take better care of yourself. You're not hurting anybody else, but you need to take better care of yourself.
You know, there's some small towns up north that are like that. And I have some friends live up there, and I was up there visiting one time, and we went into town. They were having some kind of a celebration or something, you know. And I started to lock my car, and he says, what are you doing? I said, I'm going to lock the car. He says, well, what if somebody needs to move it? I'm like, you know, and he just left the keys in his truck, and went there, and I said, I'm sorry, I'm just not that trusty. He wanted me to leave the keys in case it was in somebody's way.
Yeah, on the floor isn't too bad, but in the ignition where people can see when they look in. Yeah.
Everybody up there did that pretty much. You know, you have to live there.
When I was a kid living in the big city, Letha, I don't think anybody locked their doors then. I remember I used to go down to my friend's house and just walk in without knocking.